His name is Jose Ramon Fernandez Pena. He's an associate professor of health education at San Francisco State University. He's the founder of the Welcome Back Initiative. In 2011, he was honored by the Migration Policy Institute. Dr. Fernandez Pena has a degree in medicine and also a master's degree in administration from NYU. In 2011, he was recognized by the White House as champion of change for his work on immigration integration. So with that, I would like to introduce Dr. Fernandez Pena.
Hello, everybody. Good afternoon. And thank you, Xochitl, for setting the stage for what we're going to be talking about for a while now. The Welcome Back Initiative started in 2001, but the concept really began many years before that. And you will ask yourself, why welcome back? And many people ask me that, and I just thought it made sense in Spanish. It translates as bienvenido. So welcome back to your profession. That was the intent. I had no idea that there used to be a TV show here called Welcome Back, Cutter. And that association that many people made to the program. So our idea was to really welcome back individuals who had been trained in the health professions in their countries of origin and for some reason came to the U.S. Can you hear me?
Hello.
Came back to the U.S. and had been unable to find their way back into the health sector, yet still they were working in whatever capacity they could. They could be taking care of children or taking care of an old person that was sick or whatever it was. So we began the idea of really looking closely at what were the community needs in terms of having a more diverse and more culturally competent and linguistically competent health workforce that better reflected the needs of an increasingly growing diverse population of patients and people seeking health services. I worked at Mission Neighborhood Health Center here, a community-based clinic, where we had, for example, the California Comprehensive Perinatal Services Program, which requires that every place have a social worker, a provider, a health educator, and a nutritionist. So in a community-based clinic that serves 78% patients who are Latinos, they don't only need to speak Spanish. They need to understand the culture and the language. A nutritionist needs to understand what a tortilla means in the diet of a Mexican, not just say, don't eat them. So we would find people that would come and apply for jobs that were vacant for years, and we would say, we'd love to take you right now, so where's your license as a social worker? Well, what license? I trained in Nicaragua. But what's your California license? Well, I don't have it. So we need you. You have the skills, the population needs you, but we can't hire you for this job. So we created this center with the idea of connecting community assets with community needs. We started here in San Francisco in partnership between City College and San Francisco State, and then we grew very quickly to Los Angeles and San Diego. And now, 11 years later, we have 10 centers in 8 states. And yes, we do it because many entities, Institute of Health, Sullivan Commission, many places have documented the importance in having a health workforce that better reflects the population they serve. I would add to this, though, that there's something inevitable in my mind that is going to be the intersection of health reform and immigration reform for 2 reasons. When and if we develop ever an intelligent immigration policy and we have a number of individuals that will be eligible for health services, many of those folks are not going to be native English speakers. A. B. The health workforce that is there already does not look at all like the population seeking health services today, and we're going to need very quickly many stripes of health workers over the next 3-4 years to serve an additional, 38 million people that will be covered potentially through the Affordable Care Act. So we have something cooking right now. So any ideas we have about increasing the size, the shape, the form, the color, and the language spoken by the health workforce would be a good idea. I propose that Welcome Back is one of those good ideas. There's many pipeline programs. There's many ways of contributing to what we all need to get to. A couple of facts about immigration that you probably already know. But immigration has not stopped and continues to grow, certainly in California and in many border states we're not unfamiliar with immigration. But if you look there, for example, Tennessee, 489% growth in immigration from 1990 to 2010. These are areas that we're not really used to seeing people that didn't sound, look, or talk, or worship like they did. So this is providing challenges, but it's also providing opportunities, because these folks are also seeking health services. Some of them may be able to provide some of the health services that will be needed. Another interesting thing is that oftentimes when we think about immigrants, we think about, you know, the ones that may be suited to picking grapes and scrubbing bathrooms. But in fact, the educational attainment of immigrants since the 80s has increased significantly, and we now see that at least 30% or more of immigrants have a bachelor's degree or more in education. And this varies by areas, but in Ohio, for example, the data shows that more immigrants have a bachelor's degree than native Ohioans. So it's interesting to think that immigrants perhaps bring asset skills that could be tapped and used and built on. Another factor that is interesting is that even in this economy and the recession, the health sector continues to be one of the areas of the economy that is still growing. So this has not stopped even in the midst of this recession. And here you see the cumulative growth is much higher in health professions and it's actually negative in the non-health field. So who do we see in this program? We see a plethora of individuals that come from about 157 countries, primarily nurses and doctors, dentists, social workers, pharmacists, any health profession you could think of. We even see doctors of veterinary medicine who we do not serve. We just work with individuals that work in human health. Important, we work with individuals who already live in the United States and only with people who already live in the United States. We do not associate work or lend services, advice, or anything to individuals or entities that are interested in bringing health workforce from other countries, areas, or anything like that. What do they look like? The people we serve are pretty interesting, as you can see there. I think that a couple of interesting findings for me, the amount of them that are women, 71% of them are women, and this poses a series of interesting challenges, which I learned directly from them through focus groups. For example, women state that the biggest challenge they encounter when trying to re-enter the health field is their condition as women. And is why? Because I'm the wife, but I'm also the mother, and I'm also the caretaker, and I'm also the doctor, and I'm also the one that has a steady job now. Okay, so it was important for us in order to understand how we needed to model our services so individuals could access our services and could really benefit from what we were doing. They're fairly young for the most part. More than half of them have a pretty good level of English that enables them to take classes, sit for licensure exams, go for job interviews and things like that. A good third of them have at least one dependent in the U.S., and I don't have the data here, but I bet you that at least these 36% also have a dependent or more in their home country. So the implications of how we are able to work with these folks and help them move up career ladders or enter the health professions has ramifications not only locally but internationally. 64% of them are not working in health at all when we see them. They're literally working at restaurants and changing beds at your hotels and doing whatever it is because they need to eat, they need to put food on the table, they need to support their families here and abroad. They come, as I said, from 157 countries. These are the top countries. Not surprisingly, since we started in California and we have a center in Texas, the majority come from Latin America, Mexico being a big contributor, but depending on what area we're talking about, the profiles look entirely different. In Boston, for example, they have a very large Haitian population, and in Washington State, they have a more African population than they do in other parts of the country. New York is, of course, a very mixed bag as well. San Antonio is practically Mexican exclusively, and San Diego has many more Latinos than we do in San Francisco, where we have a ton of Russians, for example, Filipinos and Chinese. What do we find when we work with them? So they come to us and we do an in-depth assessment of their educational, academic, professional, and psychosocial circumstances. Who were you, who are you, and who do you want to be? And that's essentially the question. So they say, I was a doctor, I'm 57 years old, I live with my family, I support three people, I have two jobs, I've been in the country for 20 years, my English is not very good, and I want to be a doctor again. So we take that information and we work with them. And what else did you do besides being a doctor in your country? Well, I taught anatomy and I was the chair of the anatomy department of the school, and then I managed the program of this, and then, okay. So we tried to start rescuing pieces of their professional persona and try to find options or alternatives that may be respectful, valid, attainable, realistic for them. So if they want to be a doctor, we tell them, this is what it takes to be a doctor in the U.S. These are the steps, this is the timeline, this is the cost, these are your odds based on what we know. You want to go for it? We'll support you in that process. Think that, given your circumstances, it may be tough for you. We may not be able to say that. We let them come to that place. We offer the advice that we have. And when they're ready to hear about what options they have, we walk them through the options. It may be that you want to pursue a master's degree in public health. Maybe you would be very well suited for a professorship somewhere. Maybe you would consider a career in biotechnology, in research, or maybe you want to work with our friends at UCSF and do some kind of policy work. So we try to explore options that are relevant and maybe fulfilling for them. The other big thing we always encounter is the lack of command of the English language, and we dealt with that by developing an accelerated health-focused ESL curriculum that we now offer through City College and through 50 colleges in the country, 46 in the country and 4 in Canada. So it's a modular design. It's really neat. It's at City College here and a number of colleges in the area. It has its own website. You can look it up, englishhealthtrain.org. And it really cuts the time down from typical ESL programs that go from 3 to 5 years to about a full year intensive and gets people from no hablo inglés to good morning, I'm going to take your blood pressure now. So it's a pretty neat curriculum. Another big thing that we encounter and try to help them with is the impact that the loss of the professional identity brings. So just think of yourselves. You're suddenly stripped of your country, your family, your friends, your context, your language, your beliefs, and the area where you were somebody. Because even if you were in the poorest country in the world, you were still the nurse. And now you are Mary, the cleaning lady. So that does something to people on top of all the other losses. So we try to, we don't do therapy, we don't do social work deep down, but we do make referrals when appropriate to a number of entities and agencies. But we honor the fact that they are somebody. So you may not be licensed to practice what you learned, but you still are that person. And we do as much as we can about that, but it has a really big impact. Another thing, barrier that affects them is the lack of familiarity with the U.S. health system. Xochitl was talking a little bit about that. If I came from a country where you have a nurse and a doctor, or you don't, and you come to the U.S. where you have the CNA, LVN, BSN, MSN, nurse with midwife, nurse practitioner, nurse anesthetist, the physician assistant, I don't know what you're talking about. So I know what I did. I don't know where I fit here. What may be my options, my choices? In most countries, you don't have all these allied health professions that you have in the U.S. In most countries, you don't have dental hygienists. You certainly don't have physician assistants. You don't have EKG tech. I mean, the nurse takes the EKGs or the resident or something like that. So also not understanding a bunch of things that are uniquely American. Now they're becoming more universal, but informed consent, HIPAA regulations. What's that red box hanging everywhere? In most countries, you try to autoclave the equipment because you don't have every throwaway piece of thing. We don't have informed consent things. We don't inform the patient because the patient is the last person that should know is dying. We inform the family. It's just cultural norms that are different. And if we don't let our participants in the game, they will never be successful in that context that's going to require them to think so differently than what they usually think like. Economic issues, of course, time and money. They can't go to school because they have 2 jobs, and they can't job the jobs because they have to support the family. So how do we help them find courses that are either free, get some sorts of scholarships or some kinds of things, or internships where they may learn some of the skills in the game and then be prepared for that position while earning a decent income? And that's at the individual level. At the structural level, we find all sorts of administrivia and issues that get in the way of people going from where they are to where they really could and good and should go. These are the kinds of services that we offer at the 10 Welcome Back Centers. So you see pretty much everybody offers case management, but then some others can offer something like tuition reimbursement or job placement services. This depends on what each center... Okay, thank you. So this is out there. It's all... I didn't bring any handouts, but I can get you any handouts if you want stuff like that. What have we been able to do? We've worked with a lot of people. Highlights here, we have been able to assist over 100 physicians enter residency training programs. A lot of people have obtained employment in the U.S. health sector for the first time. Many of them have been able to move up the career ladder and are continuing to move up the career ladder. Their income increases significantly by the time they come to us the first time to by the time they end their engagement with us. Thousands more are currently engaged in some process that will hopefully get them back into the health workforce. They may be preparing for licensure exams, they may be taking complementary classes they need to sit for that licensure exam, or they may be in the process of getting their transcripts out of their country and having trying to find the money to get them translated and then evaluated. The impact of a program like this, again, back to the implementation of the Affordable Care Act, it's really a very cost-effective way of developing a more linguistically and culturally diverse workforce. It's certainly not the answer, but it's something that can contribute to the answer. We build on community assets. This facilitates further economic integration, civic integration, social integration of immigrants. Let's not forget, I am very grateful as an immigrant that I was welcomed to this country. It is a country that has been built by immigrants. Not allowing this opportunity again to a number of individuals that are here, they're willing, they're able. Most of us, like I think I can speak for all of us, we did not come here for a handout. We came here with a bunch of gratitude and with a willingness to engage and work and contribute. So it would be really stupid not to make use of this asset in a nutshell. We have a toolkit that we use to disseminate the program, and if anybody from anywhere is interested, you can talk to me. We do trainings for that piece. This is where we are. We did have a center in Los Angeles that is now closed for renovation until we get additional money to renovate it fully. This is where the centers are located. Many of them are hosted by community colleges, state universities, community-based centers, the Department of Health and Human Services in Montgomery County. So it's at lots of different places. We have a website. You see the link down there. Please don't give my phone number to anybody. Give them the number of the San Francisco centers. That's where they would get all their questions answered. And that's it. Thank you very much.